Sahana Vavatu, Sahana Bhunatu, Sahaviryam Karavavahai, Tejasvinavaritamastoma Vidyavishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sarigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare.
Okay. Page 42. Sutra 1317. Prasiddhescha. Prasiddhe. Because of being famous in this way. Cha. And. The space in the heart is Vishnu, also because he is often described as space. Sutra Prakashika. The Sutrakara removes the grounds for doubt by explaining that the word sky, akasha, is commonly used in the Shruti to denote the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Sri Govinda Bhasya. It is well known that the word akasha is often used to mean Brahman in passages such as ko yevan yat ka Pranat yaesha akasha anando nasyat. Who could breathe if akash were not bliss? Taittiriya Upanishad 2.7. Bhagavatam verse reference. Right? So, starting off here, so you've already defeated the point by the logic and everything else by straight from the verse itself, right? Because that's what the other person is arguing. And now, they're also just showing that Akash is also used to mean the Lord. Because otherwise, if you started there, then that might start the whole argument. And then you don't have, you know, it's just more difficult. So you already defeat it based on the standard logic and the definitions that are there. Then when you go to this point, then it's like it's, you know, how you say, you know, like dessert or something. No. Bhagavatam verse resonance. Dahara means sky. The word sky is often used in Upanishads to signify the Supreme Lord. Srimad Bhagavatam 3.5.32. The sky is a product of sound, and sound is the transformation of egotistic ignorance. In other words, the sky is the symbolic representation of the Supreme Soul. Footnote 22. Srila Prabhupada comments. In the Vedic hymns it is said, Etasmad Atmana Akasha Sambhutaha. The sky is the symbolic representation of the Supreme Soul. Those who are egotistic in passion ignorance cannot conceive of the personality of Godhead. For them, the sky is the symbolic representation of the Supreme Soul. Right? So, means those in passion ignorance, they can't understand the Lord. Because the Lord being situated in pure goodness, where's the concept? Ignorance means lack of knowledge. Goodness means knowledge. Passion means for your own particular benefit. Goodness means for, you know, because of duty or for someone else's benefit. In a sense. So by consciousness, they actually don't have anything common with understanding the Lord. That's why they can't understand. So that's why the Vedas talk about so much about being purified. Because by purification, you bring yourself to the mode of goodness, then it's easier to understand the Lord. We're not saying that the mode of goodness allows you to understand the Lord. It just means that when one's in goodness, one's more open to the concept. Right? It's only that you'll get the knowledge of the Lord from those who have that knowledge of the Lord. That's what's going to happen. Does that make sense? So it's not that we're pushing the mode of goodness because that will create bhakti. No, it's that when we're in the mode of goodness, we're more open to taking advantage of those who are situated in pure devotion. Does that make sense? Yeah, but still is the Lord's going to receive. Now, for those who are in the passion and ignorance, than the representation of the Lord as sky, that they can understand. It's unlimited. Everything's accommodated in it. Right? All means the sound. Everything's happening by sound. If you understand that aspect, then by sound, all things are produced. So then you could understand that, yes, this represents the Lord. Does that make sense? You know, because otherwise you say, okay, Lord's the greatest. He's all-knowing, omniscient. Like, that we can catch these universal kind of impersonal concepts. But to be able to catch the personal and finer points, then one needs to have higher modes. Does that make sense? Yeah. Sutra 1318. Itara paramarshat tad iti chen nasam bhavat. Itara, the other. Paramarshat, because of reference. Saha, he, iti, thus, chet, if. Na, not, asam bhavat, because of impossibility. If one says that the space refers to the jiva because of reference to the jiva in the text, the answer is no, because it is impossible for the jiva to have the qualities mentioned. Right? So they're just trying to take it that they're talking about jiva, so these go to the jiva, these qualities.
We haven't read the Chaturthakura commentary. Footnote, Vishwanath Chaturthakura
comments. Okay. Vishwanath Chaturthakura comments. Ahankara and tamas is the cause of the sense objects, such as sound. From which ether arose ether, which is a form of the Supreme Lord, Atmanaha, since it reveals the Lord through sound describing his qualities. Or another meaning is, from sound, which is a form of the Lord, Atmana, arose the form of ether. Being an effect of the Lord, sound is called Atma, for the Shruti says, Tasmat va etasmat Atmana gakasha sambhutaha. In ether, the ether arose from the Lord who pervades sound, Atmanaha. Taittiriya Upanishad 2.1, Sardartha Darshani 3.5.32. So he's bringing out the point of that he is the ether because that's what sound moves in. And the sound vibration that's moving in it is him. So actually, he's the cause of these things. And then also the point is this Ahankara, that then is the cause of the gross elements of sound. So the gross things that you're hearing and all that, that's coming from the effect of the ahankara, or false ego. That's why we identify with the external elements. That's why then when we talk about it, it has meaning to us. Right? What we saw before is that for the pure devotees, then the material energy, it doesn't have the same meaning. They see, when they hear about it, they see about it in connection with the Lord. So they're not dealing with false ego. They're dealing with real ego. So they're dealing on pure goodness. Right? So it's just a different effect. Point is all these things are there, and the Lord has arranged it this way so the materialist can take advantage of the material energy. Because if it wasn't produced in this way, then how would the materialist take advantage? They wouldn't. Because if everything is seen in connection with the Lord and everything's based on pure goodness, how would the materialist function? They can't function because they're situated in passion and ignorance. So therefore, the Lord has this, the energies transformed, that Yogamaya transforms into Mahamaya. Then the materialist can take advantage. But what's the difference? The difference is simply in the attitude, not the form. Right? The form is the same. But the difference being is then how it's being controlled. So forms, all the gross things that we see like this, here, that's a manifestation of the mode of ignorance. But in the spiritual world, that's sandini potency. Does that make sense? You know. So that's the whole point, but it's all transcendental. So the materialist can't see it, cannot appreciate it. Well, but here, because then it's a transformation of the mode of ignorance, because that's the reflection of sandini, then it will have some meaning. Okay, Sutra Prakashika. Here the Sutrakara responds to the Kutura's insistence that the space in the heart is the jiva. This is impossible, because in the beginning of the passage there's the description of eight qualities that cannot be ascribed to the jiva. Right? So they're just trying very, very hard, because if they're going to be Brahman, that means they're God, so all the qualities ascribed to God, they could say, these are our qualities. But this is just false ego. The point is the jiva doesn't have that quality. Right? So, therefore, then when it's mentioning these qualities, it means the Lord, not the jiva. Right? And material matters is unconscious, so they don't apply there either. Sri Govinda Bhashya, Purva Paksha. But within the same passage concerning the space in the heart, the jiva is mentioned. Right? There's also probably an and there. So that does that mean that the and now is the Supreme Lord? You understand? Just because it happens to be. The liberated soul arises from the body, reaches the supreme light, and becomes endowed with his own form. That is the immortal, fearless Brahman. Chandogya Upanishad 8.3.4. Thus, the space in the heart must be the jiva. Right. So that's their, what do you call it? Argument. Of course, we would say is when it says his own form, we mean the spiritual form, but they take it that, that is the immortal, fearless Brahman, so therefore that's the form as he takes on Brahman. Right? Siddhanta. Itara paramarshat sa iti chen nasambhavat. If one says that the space refers to the jiva, because of reference to the jiva in the text, the answer is no, because it is impossible for the jiva to have the qualities mentioned. Just because of a reference, paramarshat, to jiva, itara, in the middle of the passage, it cannot be claimed that the space in the heart is the jiva. Why? Because it is impossible, asambhavat, since the eight attributes of that space mentioned, starting with being free of sin, are not applicable to the jiva. Right? Because otherwise, if he's free from sin, then why is he sitting here studying the Vedanta Sutra, trying to become free from sin? Right? So that's the whole point. They can say, no, but when he comes to that platform, but the point is then that's referring to Brahman. Because according to their philosophy, they'll become Brahman. So only when they're Brahman, they would have those qualities. But as a jiva, they don't have the qualities. Therefore, it's in connection with Brahman, not even the jiva. So even in their own philosophy, it doesn't make sense. Does that make sense?
Maharaj?
Yes.
But, when we have the beginning of the passage, which mentions, let's say, Brahman, then the jiva, and then let's say it ends with Brahman. So the beginning, middle, and the end. So obviously, having the sangati, then it naturally applies that whatever has been said before is applied to whatever is in the middle. That's the reason why something like that doesn't hold.
That's there, but the point is you have to see the context. You know what I'm saying? You have to see the context. So if the context doesn't connect to the jiva, then it's not talking about the jiva.
Because the jiva can have partial qualities, at least, the eight qualities.
He's starting with being free from sin? Why is the jiva in the material world? Yeah, so then it can't be applying to jivas that are in the material world that are conditioned. Liberated jivas maybe, but not there. So, but why are they doing this? They're going through, this is their process, their knowledge and their process, how they're going to come to that perfectional stage. That means they're not at perfection now. That means they are impure. Does that make sense? The rules are there for general application, but then you have to see the context in which they apply. That context is always there. It's just like, let's say, in teaching grammar, they will first show what's the standard way of looking at it. Then once that's understood, then they'll show the exceptions. Because if they start with exceptions, people would become confused and never understand what the standard is. So that's a basic standard, is that you're taking direct things like that. But if we're taking direct meaning, The direct meaning is these qualities don't apply to the jiva, so therefore it can't mean the jiva. Is that? Okay. Footnote 23. These eight qualities are apahata, papa, free from sins, vijara, freedom from old age, vimrityu, freedom from death, vishoka, freedom from material distress and happiness, vijigatsa, freedom from hunger, apipata, freedom from material desire, satyakama, spiritual desire, satyasankalpa, self-fulfillment. So can we say that that goes to the jiva?
For the liberated jiva, yes.
Even that, the point is the self-fulfillment, but where is that coming from?
From the Lord.
Yes, from the Lord. So we understand. So on the Brahman platform, the jiva is on that platform, but you can't say that what is being explained here is a process for the jiva to get to that platform. Because then, if you're saying it's a process, it means the jiva doesn't have these qualities.
Yes.
Right? So we're not talking about the liberated soul here. We're talking about the soul being connected to that supreme, then they can appreciate. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay.
Also, these people, like those who interpret like this, they look for exceptions, and from there they try to make a standard thing.
Oh no! It's yes, and try to make a standard. Yes. So they're yeah. But the basic point is if the whichever is felt supports their philosophy, they will take that one and then make that into the standard. But yes, but that doesn't work. There already is a standard. That's the point. That's what Shastra's for. Shastra establishes the standard. Right? So then the Upanishads, the direct meaning is the standard. So that means Vedanta Sutra, which is based on the Upanishads, then it's direct meaning. But for the impersonalist, then indirect meaning is totally what they have to use. They don't use direct meaning because they figure that's too general, that's too common. Anybody can understand the direct meaning. But to understand mental speculation of indirect meaning, then that takes more intelligence. So due to pride, then they think this is the real. You know, it's like academics. It doesn't have monster words that you can't understand, then they think it's not, you know, properly intellectual. So it's the words that make the man, not the actual meaning and the understanding. Does that make sense? So that's the whole point. A person who's a scholar means he actually understands the essence. But here it's no. I understand word. I know so many words. I know grammar. I can put it together in fancy ways that others can't even understand what I'm saying. See my greatness. See my scholasticness. But what they're talking about doesn't even make sense to, you know, children.
The mentality was same, but earlier at least they were using that on something subtle. Now it is more grasped, like the ten tanmatras, which are more of ignorance.
Yes, yes, yes. But I mean, you're going through and just removing everything. Because they'll say these others are strong. Oh, that's material. But once you've done that, then you can deal. So that's the, also, you know, your order. You deal with the subtle, then come to the gross. Just like when you were discussing philosophy, we start with the Vedanta, which is above the modes. The principle. That aspect, then people can understand, and you present the logic and all that, they'll appreciate that. Now, when you bring it down into the practical points, where they might take issue, that's where the difficulty comes. But if you've already established the principles before, now dealing with the external, then you can refer back to those principles, because they've already accepted those. Well, if we try to start with an issue, it'll always be a problem. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah.
How can one understand that the Shastras are dealing right now, currently, if whatever person reads is standard or an exception? Because a common man is not that intelligent enough.
But that's why we have Vedanta Sutra to explain. Vedanta Sutra is explaining what the Upanishads are saying.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Okay.
So therefore, if we take Vyasadeva's his presentation, then we'll understand.
So is it that for the exceptions one has to go to the Puranas also for some of the examples, extreme examples?
Well, in here, then it can stand on its own because you're working on the grammar. And because it's Upanishads, then you're going to take from there. So they're going to be discussing in connection with the Upanishads and using logic. That's why it's called Nyaya Prasthan, because it's logical. And so they're trying to use logic to prove what's improper rather than using the logic, because they're trying to use an indirect meanings rather than direct meanings. But you'll find that when you go from the Puranas and all that, then the stories and all that are nice, and you can catch that. But then sometimes people don't catch the technical points.
Mm-hmm.
Like you see here is that for every sutra, there's Bhagavatam verses,
yes.
Right? So that means that point is made in the Bhagavatam, mm-hmm. but it's not necessarily that people catch that that's one aspect of what mm-hmm. it means. So the technical philosophical points aren't gained.
Mm-hmm.
So people think they have to look elsewhere to gain that intellectual stimulation, you know, because otherwise it doesn't. So that just means that's just mundane. It's not a spiritual need, it's a mundane need.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that they fancy your words and this and that. But if you use these fancy words, who sits around and reads Vedanta Sutra? I only know of one devotee who reads Vedanta Sutra. Literally, one. You know? And he reads that just for, you know, light reading, because it's, you know, it's interesting, it's you know, to remember the thing, because, you know, the more you repeat, the more you catch the little points and everything like that. You know, most would read this, be cracking their skull. For him, it's like trying to remember and see the order and see the technical points like that. You know what I'm saying? So, that person, then you can sit there and discuss any aspect of philosophy. I mean, there's nothing that you couldn't discuss. Because they're able to catch these things. So that's the point, is they can also study Bhagavatam. But that's what we're meaning, is that then through the Upanishads, then it's understood it's going to be technical and all that, so then you'll pay attention to the technical points. But the furtherness, because this just establishes the position, but to actually understand how that's applied in devotional service, that's what Bhagavatam does. Because being on the spiritual platform, that's just the basis. Then you have to actually apply it and get the result of pleasing Krishna. Does that make sense? That's why then the Bhagavatam verse takes it that farther step. Does that make sense? Yeah. Bhagavatam verse reference. The term dahara does not refer to the jiva, because the dahara is the source of eight spiritual qualities sought after by the jiva. See, that's the thing. He's not the source of those qualities.
Mm-hmm.
They're coming. He's trying to gain these. That means he doesn't have them. So it can't mean jiva. Because
mm-hmm.
in this case, we can say, no, but we know the jiva on the liberated platform. But is there a jiva on the liberated platform for the Mayavadis? No, so it can't mean jiva.
Mm-hmm.
You understand?
Yeah.
Yeah, so we have to understand also the context of their philosophy and their arguments. So it can never in any way, shape, or form refer to jiva, because jiva means a conditioned living entity. They don't know about a liberated jiva. They know that there's Brahman, and then there's illusion. So there's the illusion of the environment, and there's the illusion that you exist in that environment. So they're trying to get back to the position of Brahman, but then that means there is no jiva, there is no energy.
Mm-hmm.
So therefore, they can't use these and say it's the jiva to show that I am God. Because the point is if you're jiva, you're not God. You know what I'm saying? They can't have their cake and eat it. They'll try to do it. They'll say that it's all illusion, but they'll argue, day and night about how that illusion proves that they're a god. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing. They're just cheating. It's just false ego. Right? They're just as materialistic as the karmis. They put it more on the intellectual false ego rather than the goods in that you have as false ego. Does that make sense? Srimad Bhagavatam 10.87.38. The illusory material energy nature attracts the minute living entity to embrace her, and as a result he assumes forms composed of her qualities. Subsequently he loses all his spiritual qualities and he must undergo repeated deaths. You, however, avoid the material energy in the same way that a snake abandons its old skin. Glorious in your possession of 8 mystic perfections, you enjoy unlimited opulence. Footnote 24. The gulf of difference between the position of the conditioned soul and the Lord is expressed by Srila Sridhar Swami in the following verse. The glance you cast upon your consort comprises time, the material propensities of the living entities, and so on. This glance dances upon her face, thus awakening the multitude of created entities who take birth in the modes of goodness, passion, and ignorance. O Lord Nrihari, your Maya has put her foot on my head and is pressing down extremely hard, causing me great distress. Now I have come to you for shelter. Please make her desist. So it's not that we will control Maya. It's that we surrender to Krishna. He'll control. So it's not that, no, by our sadhana we'll get these 8 qualities and this and that. No, it's by surrendering to the Lord. Then one takes on the qualities of the Lord rather than the qualities that are the reflection of the original that Maya has. So, yeah. Sutra 1319. Uttarascha avirbhava sarupas tu. Uttarat, because of a later passage, chait, if, avirbhava, manifestation, sarupas, form, tu, indeed. If one argues that later passages show that Jiva has 8 qualities and is thus the space in the heart, the answer is no, because the Jiva's qualities manifest through sadhana. Sutra Prakashika. Here the Sutrakara responds to the Mayavadi doubt that the passage in question refers not to the Bada Jiva but to the individual soul in the state of liberation. No longer obscured by illusory limiting designations, the jiva manifests the above 8 qualities by virtue of its absolute non-difference from Brahman. In the present case, Shankara acknowledges that the Sutrakara differentiates between Brahman and jiva. However, he explains it away by insisting that this difference is not real, only a popular misconception. Right? So he accepts that there is a difference. Right, so that's there, and then he again applies his Maya, where just saying, "Oh, but that's not actually the point." Right. Shankara is refuted by the counter argument that the jiva may indeed attain the divine qualities, but only after long practice of sadhana and through the Lord's inconceivable favor. Moreover, of the 8 qualities mentioned, some of them, like being the bridge that spans the worlds and the maintainer of the worlds, are never applicable to the jiva. Right? So those qualities never come under. Right? So some qualities they may develop, but never all the qualities. Remember, the jiva only has, 50 out of the 64. So then the qualities that are beyond, that the jiva doesn't have. Govindabhashya, Purvapaksha. Okay, let that be. After the teachings about the space in the heart, where the 8 qualities are mentioned, Prajapati speaks about the jiva. Thus, the qualities mentioned in the section concerning the space in the heart can be applied to the jiva. Thus, the space in the heart must be the jiva. Okay, so then again here is, we mention these verses, then Prajapati will later talk about the jiva. So then, by that reference, they're saying, see these qualities, then therefore belong to the jiva, because he's come up in the conversation. Right? You know, it's like saying, like, I really appreciate that, you know, you're so, you know, you have so much wealth and you're able to use that so nicely for Krishna. And then by argument, because the word I was there in that whole verse, it means all that money belongs to me. That's basically what they're trying to do. And then afterwards it says, no, but it's talking about the person. You don't have that money, you know, like that. Then it says, no, but later after that, then he says, oh, no, you know, I'm just like you, and, you know, like this and that. We're all just trying to do our best and all that. And so, you know, but you're, you know, so nice. And so, see, now it's talking about me. So that means that that previous point about his money is also about me. You understand what they're trying to do? Like that. So that's the problem, so. Like that. Siddhanta. The idea is refuted in the text in the next sutra. Uttarash Ched Avirbhava Sarupas Tu. If one argues that the latter passages show that Jiva has the eight qualities, and is thus the space in the heart, the answer is no. Because the Jiva's qualities manifest through sadhana. The word tu, but, indicates a refutation. The word na, oh. So two, but means, indicates refutation. So when someone is going, but, you know, it's actually just a pleasant refutation. Right?
But in the word to word it mentioned, indeed. In the word to word translation, two, it mentioned as indeed, not but.
But does but also mean but?
Yeah.
It can have all those things. We have to understand this. The sutrakar used the term, and then the commentators they're putting in, so they're bringing out the broadness of the meaning. Okay?
Yes.
Okay. The word na should be understood. In Prajapati's speech, he teaches that these eight qualities arise in the jiva by sadhana, but it is not possible to say that the space in the heart develops the eight qualities by sadhana. Right? The space in the heart already has those qualities. And that means in every jiva. Right? Because otherwise, what's the point of even referring to the space in the heart as the supreme, and the jiva can, through sadhana, attain that transcendental position if Brahman doesn't have that position? So if the space in the heart refers to the jiva who's conditioned, but it's saying that space in the heart has all those qualities, but then if there's a conditioned soul in that heart, then it can't be true. So then of all the living entities that are there with space in their heart, then that means it's not talking about them. Right? If we're trying to define it as jiva. But we're saying the space in the heart always has these qualities. So that can't mean the jiva. It has to mean the supreme. So. It is to be understood that the space in the heart has the eight qualities eternally. However, Prajapati states that the jiva's qualities arise from sadhana. So, just like by associating with Maya, we take on her qualities, by associating with the Lord, we take on those qualities. For it is said, sa evam avaisham prasado smach charirat samuttaya. The liberated soul rising from the body appears in his own form. Chandogya Upanishad 8.12.3. Thus there's a great difference between the jiva and the Lord. Even though the jiva attains these qualities by sadhana, the qualities like supporting the world and acting like a dike show that the Lord is the space in the heart. Right? So he's on that platform. Right? So by sadhana, he'll raise himself up to that transcendental position. So in the liberated state, then he takes on that form. In his own form. Then he takes on the natural transcendental nature of the jiva. Does that make sense? So, then we'll understand that's his transcendental position, the Brahma-Bhuta platform. Then taking it a step further, then he takes on his spiritual form in which he expresses his devotion to the Lord. In other words, if there's no devotion, he just takes on that spiritual position, that form. But if we take to the next, it has another. Does that make sense? Because we may say, but you know, what about the gross forms? But that's the point. It's gross. We're talking subtle. Because gross comes from subtle. Just like when the species of life are explained, then the point is, these species are mentality. Like when Bhaktivinoda Thakur is explaining it, then Bauda then is one of the species. In the 400,000, Bauda is a species. So it's not necessarily physical species. It's a mentality. Therefore, that form will act in that way. Right? There may be grosser forms that it takes on this, but the point is you change the mentality, you change the species. Does that make sense? Buddhist.
No, you said the word Bauda is one of the eight.
Yeah, Buddhists.
Buddhists. Oh, it's species.
Yeah, they're a species. They're an atheistic species. Mm-hmm. So whoever takes it up, they become that species. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's right.
Bhagavatam verse reference. By meditation upon the Supreme Lord, the jiva attains perfection. Srimad Bhagavatam 4.9.52. The residents of the palace praise the queen. Dear queen, you must have worshipped the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who delivers his devotees from the greatest danger. Persons who constantly meditate upon him surpass the course of birth and death. This perfection is very difficult to achieve. Footnote, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur paraphrases, by worshipping the Lord you have conquered the death of your son. Srimad Bhagavatam 4.9.52. So the greatest dangers and all that means we have these points, birth, death, old age and disease. These are the greatest dangers for the living entity. Right? And especially if that's applied within the animal species, because then how do you take up Krishna consciousness? But the point is these dangers come from the polluted consciousness. So actually when Krishna saves one from these, means he saves us from our polluted consciousness. That's the real thing he saves us from. It's not necessarily external dangers. So does that make sense? Yeah. It's actually the dangers that come from our consciousness polluted by sinful desire. So he saves us from the reactions of sin. Doesn't necessarily mean the prarabdha. It means the mentality that we have, that therefore we do the activities that will in time generate prarabdha. Because if we give up that mentality, there will not be a future birth. So that's more important.
It doesn't say he doesn't save us from prarabdha, but still the prarabdha doesn't affect us as because
yes.
This is sarvam papadhyo. So.
Yeah, it doesn't affect us because why was prarabdha affect us? Because of our attachment. What's the attachment? That's sin. So when we give up sin, then we are unaffected by the material world. That's what it's meant. The lotus leaf. Or the lotus flower is in not a nice place, but it's unaffected by it. But it's there. You can say the pond is dirty, the lotus is in that pond, but the lotus is not dirty. Is that something?
Because if there wouldn't be prarabdha, wouldn't have those.
You wouldn't have the form, you wouldn't have the situation, you wouldn't have these things. So how do you express the devotion? Like, let's take Mahabharata, okay? And in Mahabharata, then basically it's the story of the Pandavas, right? So now in this story of the Pandavas, how much of the Mahabharata everything is just going wonderful, right? They have all their facilities, everything's good, no disturbances, no nothing. Yeah, I think it's basically for a short time when they're in Indraprastha, right? And so that's not a lot of time, right? Before that, trouble. After that, trouble. So then what are we seeing? We're seeing is that how in these difficult situations they're still Krishna conscious and they're undisturbed. Right? Any disturbance you see actually is simply based on that position of duties that they're performing. That they don't want to see unjust people in a position where a just man can be, especially when that just man is supposed to be Yudhishthira, who's the most just. Right? So, you know, but that's just their particular duties that they perform, and through that manifest their service. But otherwise, as far as, you know, living in the forest, they actually like living in the forest because they grew up in the forest. From when they were born in the forest, they grew up in the forest. So for them, living in the forest isn't a problem. It's simply the performance of duties. As kshatriyas, therefore as kings, then they would live in the palace and control the kingdom. Is that, yeah. So like that, they're unaffected. So that's the whole point, is that it's not that difficulties don't come, as you're unaffected by them. Okay. And so that means we have to be unaffected by our previous sinful activities, because that is created by a mentality. So that mentality, that's the problem.
Okay. Because they're establishing their eternal identity, they don't have this existential crisis when this stuff happens. It's just
yes. Okay. Okay. Sutra 1320. Anyartas cha param arshaha. Anya, another, artach, meaning, cha, and, paramarshat, reference. The jiva is mentioned for another purpose. Sri Govinda Bhashya, Purvapaksha. If that is so, then why talk about the jiva at all within that section, right? It's all or nothing, right? You know, it's like, take the car, go down to the store, you know, pick up some potatoes. So then the child takes the car, goes out, drives around town for a while, he has a good time, and then eventually gets some potatoes. And then when coming back, then the mother's saying, you know, what took you so long? You said take the car, you know, but it's not about the car, it was about getting potatoes. Then why did you mention the car? You understand? That's my advice. Right? So very intelligent, belligerent kids. Like that. Siddhanta. Anyartas cha param arshaha. The jiva is mentioned for another purpose. The jiva is mentioned in the passage in order to teach about Paramatma. Attaining the Lord, the jiva attains a form endowed with those eight qualities. Bhagavatam verse reference. Right, so we're talking about the Lord, but we're talking about the jiva in reference to how he can come to that transcendental platform by taking up service to the Lord. Right? Bhagavatam verse reference. The soul attains spiritual perfection only by the grace of the Supreme Lord. Thereupon the soul realizes his likeness to the Supreme Soul. Srimad Bhagavatam 4:28-62. My dear friend, I, the Supersoul, and you, the individual soul, are not different in quality, for we are both spiritual. In fact, my dear friend, you are not qualitative. You are qualitatively non-different from me in your constitutional position. Just try to consider this subject. Those who are actually advanced scholars or in knowledge do not find any qualitative difference between you and me. Notice he uses the words actually advanced scholars. Because you'll have those who are materially very advanced, but they're not actual advanced. This means according to the skill and the mechanics, they're advanced. But it's actually understanding the connection to the Lord that makes for the real scholarship. Right? So now, if one has that degree of scholarship and can see the Lord, then one can do so much with that scholarship. Right? But if one doesn't have that scholarship but can see the relation with the Lord, then he has attained the perfectional platform. Then in his own way, he can explain it to others. Right? People will be convinced. But if you can use the scholarly method, then they'll appreciate that scholarly aspect. And so their intellectual needs will also be satisfied. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yes.
The knowledge that has been mentioned is transcendental knowledge.
Yes, but the Vedanta is transcendental knowledge. But then you have scholars who understand Vedanta and can discuss the words and the grammar, but they're not actual scholars because they don't actually understand about the living entity, the Lord, and their relationship. Because that is knowledge. The Upanishads, that's knowledge. What is the jiva? What is the Lord? What is the material energy? What is their relationship? That's knowledge. Right? Then what's your process? And then what's your result? And in your result, having attained that position, what's the relationship still between these three? So, in other words, this is the relationship. This is the basic. That relationship being applied in a process, and that relationship being applied in the result. That's where you see the differences in philosophy. Because their definitions are, you know, the jiva is illusion, the external energy is illusion, and supreme means Brahman, which has no qualities. So, if that's there, then if he has no qualities and he's transcendental, how can you use illusion, which doesn't exist, to come to that position? You know, so their process, and then coming to that position, then they're the Supreme Lord. So what's the whole point in the whole thing anyway? You know, because they don't exist in the first place.
Yeah.
So the whole point is what's the meaning of the philosophy?
Do they not understand that their process itself is illusion, everything is illusion then?
Yes, but they don't because of attachment.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? That's the whole point, because of attachment. It's just like this. Because of attachment, then the mother and the child, then the mother, because the child doesn't do all the things in the way that the mother would want, she's, you know, she'll be disturbed. Right? Because of attachment. She thinks, it's my child, it should be exactly like me, and do exactly what I think, when I think, how I think. Right? And if it's not like that, it's a problem. Okay? Now, what happens if someone outside that points out a fault in the child? The mother can point out unlimited faults. But what if someone else points it out? Oh, there's no fault. And why is that? Because of attachment. So the same attachment, you can have two exactly opposing points in philosophy, and it doesn't make any sense. But what's the common point? Attachment. So why would the Mayavadi sometimes take this side and sometimes take that? Because of their attachment to the idea that they're God. That's all. So whatever way will support them, that's what they're going to profess. And anything that opposes, that they won't. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the whole point. The commonality is attachment. So that's why the karmis and gyanis, they have this same common point of attachment, material attachment. Is that okay? Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam 4:28-64. In this way, both swans live together in the heart. When the one swan is instructed by the other, he is situated in its constitutional position. This means he regains his original Krishna consciousness, which was lost because of his material attraction. So instead of being attracted to the Lord, he's attracted to what's not connected to the Lord. Right? Everything's connected to the Lord, but he's attracted to it being not connected to the Lord. So that's an illusion, because everything is connected to the Lord. That's why it's Maya. Because nothing's not connected to the Lord. So this must be in fourth canto. This must be about the Queen Vidarbhi. Right? Because she's the only one that talks to the Supersoul. Supersoul comes along and then discusses with her.
This is the last chapter.
Yeah, but remember, Pachina Barhishad, he said, I didn't quite understand this. And so then he told further. And so then Pachina Barhishad became Vidarbhi. And then after the Malayadvaj died, then Supersoul as a Brahmin came and then gave all this knowledge. Like that. So yes, it's all that same story. I'm just thinking, because it's third canto is Devahuti. So this is enough. Okay. Sutra 1:3:21. Alpa sutrer iti ched tad uktam. Alpa, small, sutrehe. From the Shruti, Iti, thus, chet, if, tat, that, uktam, said. Because the space is small, it must refer to the jiva, right? Just they just don't give up. This argument has already been refuted, right? Sutra Prakashika. This sutra answers the following objection. Because the small sky within is described as very small, it must refer to the jiva, which was previously described as also being very small. The answer is that, while it is true that the Lord's glories have no limit, and his sight also has no limit, he appears in this small form so that he may be easily meditated upon, right? Because otherwise the Lord in the heart, unless he's that size, how do you meditate? Right?
So the same thing we discussed about Vaishwanara, that he is of the size of Pradesh Bhakti.
Yes, yes.
Same thing is coming up.
No, it's all, it's yes, it's yeah. Always the same. It's always the... That's the thing, is with time you see is whatever the Maya body is presenting, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
They're not presenting anything new. Just same old nonsense, just new angle.
Mm. So they present the same thing and even we present the same thing.
Yes, but our same thing is actually connected with the unlimited.
Yes.
Because it means, it's like, could you go on with Mayavad philosophy with thousands of mouths and then speaking on it since eternity? No, because even in the Vedanta Sutra commentary by Shankaracharya, he doesn't comment on every verse.
Mm-hmm.
Only the Vaishnavacharyas do. So we're looking at it as every verse, and that we're referring to that, but they only touch major verses that is felt they can actually speculate it. The ones that they can't twist, you know, very nicely, they just leave alone. He just says, like this you understand. Right? So in an Adhikarana, if one verse he takes like that, all the other ones he can't actually adjust. But he says, like this you interpret. So they'll go on speculating, but he doesn't do it.
Yes, Maharaj, but then in our Vedanta Sutras, if you are studying, we see about the Samshaya and the Purvapaksha. So then this is being, like for every sutra, having a particular Samshaya and a Purvapaksha.
Because they're still arguing all these different points, so all these different points may be made, but then they're all put together here.
Okay. So is it the imagination of acharyas that they are putting Samshaya, or is it real?
Here. Okay. Why?
Mm-mm.
What benefit will you get from this particular path? You understand? So it's just itself looking at, intellectualizing on it, trying to find out what's right, what's wrong in this, but in the context of what one's own understanding. But the point is what's being made is Shankaracharya on purpose didn't discuss all of the things. But it's not that the acharyas don't understand all the aspects of his, what he's discussing. His followers are not going to understand. Which follower could argue every point? They're going to just end up with a, you know, green bird in a green tree. We already dealt with that in the first pada. We're already on the third pada. How many can discuss that far? Okay, maybe they sit at Govardhan Math, you know, in Puri. Maybe they sit at Badri, you know, at Jyoti Math, or at Sringeri, or at Dwarka. But if they don't sit there, there's a good chance they won't even know this stuff. But the acharya is to make sure from every angle, just in case if anyone brings up from any point, then you can discuss. You understand? So why put the acharyas into the area of mental speculation? What will you gain from that? You understand? So that's why we were saying before, you have to know actual scholarship means being able to understand what's the principle. Then you work that back into the mechanics as needed. But if we simply take the mechanics and think the mechanics themselves are going to give us realization of the Lord, that will never happen. And the verses, Bhagavatam verses always says that he, you know, makes Maya go away. Sridhar Swami is making that point. By your grace, then she will give up this pushing her foot on my head. Right? But we're thinking, no, by my scholarly effort, I will do that. I will push Maya's foot out of the way. Never. Because it's like, we're good at, where do you think material argument comes from? You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point. It's like that. If we're saying behind every great man is a woman, okay, so Shankaracharya is Lord Shiva. So who's the woman behind the great man? Yeah, so then she doesn't know all this stuff? So that means then she's the one that inspires them to contemplate and in this way. So to analyze, to try to understand and all that, that's always good. One should never give up that effort. But one should always be careful that applying the mundane to the acharyas, that's an extremely dangerous path. It should never be done. You know, it means you have unlimited things you can do. You know, it's just like, you take a portal. You know portal?
Yes.
It's a gourd, right?
Yes.
Now, you peel it nicely and, you know, take out the seeds and everything like that. You can stuff it with, like, some kind of burfi and stuff like that. And it's a nice sweet, right? You know, you boil the portal in sugar water. You know, so it becomes, you know, like that, and then you stuff it with like a burfi. It's a really nice sweet. Most people don't know about it because they don't think about that line. Now, if you go along the same thing, then mechanically, by options, then I could take Corella, which is a gourd, peel it a little bit, because the little bumps in that, that's the bitter part. I scrape that back a little bit, you know, boil it in sugar water and stuff it full of a burfi. It would be good. Because mechanically, it is one of the options. But of all the hundreds of mechanical options, it's not one that's used. So the point is, just because we can think of it doesn't necessarily mean it's of any use. So that's what we have to see. So that we could apply all these mundane things on the acharyas, they're not of use. Just like applying these on Krishna, it's not of any use. Does that make sense? But like Shishupa, he had 100 different angles of mundanity about Krishna. But none of them are of any value. Right? The materialist cannot advance from that. But the devotees, they can see it nicely because they see what's beyond. But one has to be careful is then they're seeing it from the transcendental. Does that make sense? So in other words, intellectual possibilities isn't enough. Just because one can see an angle, the whole point is what's the validity of the angle? Does it have a value to even pursue? And so then taking that step, then one can really get something solid. Does that make sense? In other words, contemplation is very important. That's what Vedanta Sutra is about, contemplation. But one has to know how to contemplate. Otherwise, then if the mind runs wild and contemplates anything in any way, then it doesn't necessarily work out so good. Does that make sense? Is that? Yeah.
Maharaj, so this principle of meditation, earlier we have seen that meditating on the space which is unlimited. Is it can we say that was for people in mode of ignorance, and then here generally those who meditate on a form is of higher consciousness than...
Yeah, it would be, but then you'd have to throw in some passion.
Yes.
Because what do the yogis want?
They want
siddhi, right? So that means material opulence. It means you can reach and touch the moon. How enjoyable is that? You know, space is cold. You know, this and that, moves, you know, so I mean, how enjoyable is it? No, but it's just the concept that I have these powers, that's their happiness. So in that way, technically, they're also along with the karmis. That the karmis have facilities and enjoy it. The yogis have more facilities and don't technically enjoy it with the senses. It's just that they have it, that's good. You know what I'm saying? It's just like one, I can't remember the context exactly, but it was something to do with, I think it was a father and a daughter, extremely wealthy. I mean, they were driving up to some place in their fancy car and this and that, fancy hotel and all that. But as they were getting out, then there was trouble because there's all these photographers there and this and that, and you know, some things were a disturbance. And the daughter makes the point is that, but is this actually prestigious because we're actually suffering? And the father makes the point, yes, but all those people out there, they don't know that. They think we're enjoying. So their actual enjoyment of being these multi-millionaire billionaires is that everybody else thinks you're enjoying. But otherwise, what's the enjoyment? You know what I'm saying? You can still for lunch only eat, you know, two slices of bread and with some stuff inside. That's it. You know? It's not that you can eat, I'm a billionaire, I can eat 10,000 of these sandwiches. No, you can still only eat one sandwich. So it's just the concept that is good. Just like, let's say, many times, it's a meal, okay? And I just give the person the food, they eat it, yeah, nice. Okay? Now, what if I tell them before, oh, this is, you know, made from this ingredient, from this place, you know, very difficult to get, only at this time of year you can collect them, and this and that, and then do this one and that one, knew a guy there and that, and I got it, and then here it is. Does the sandwich become better? Huh? Means your perception. Yeah, so much better. Wow, this is fabulous, isn't it? But if I didn't say anything, you just eat it and go, yeah, nice. So in other words, the mind thinking that I'm enjoying is more important than the senses. Because only someone who's trained in their senses, then they would take a bite and go, hey, doesn't this have this, 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 and that? Where did you get that? This is amazing. And amazing that it has it there and I know what it is. You understand? So that's the whole point, is that it's not, you know. Is the bull happy eating? They get their grass, they're eating. Are they happy? Yes. But do they taste much? No. The bulls are famous, they make no distinction in what they're chewing on. As long as they're chewing, they're happy. Right? Cows make a distinction in what they're chewing. Right, bulls, you feed them the same thing, it doesn't matter. Cows, you know, depending on your feed, they're more happy than milk, there's that.
Said that you can feed anything to a bull.
Yes. Yeah, so that's the whole point. So, it's the mind. The mind's happy, you're happy. The mind's not happy, you're not happy. So, how do we get into that?
Meditation.
Yes, on the yogi. So, therefore, the yogi has the perception mentally, I have all these powers, I have all this prowess, so this is great, this is enjoyment. But actually, they're just karmis that don't actually enjoy. Right? They got the facility, they don't enjoy. So actually, how is it better? You know what I'm saying? And then from the other is that you can say, oh, but now they have understanding of the super soul, they're on the Brahman platform. But the point is they know Paramatma and then they give that up for Brahman. So we're taking it, it's a higher position, but then they're using that for a lower? Or if they have the higher position, but it's about the lower? So I'm saying that's why many times it doesn't mention yogis. You mention the karmis and jnanis, it includes yogis, but if you want to make a distinction, then you say karma, jnana, and yoga. Does that make sense? So that's the things. They're also materialists. So all of them are materialists. We take it that, no, the mind bodies are spiritual. They're materialists. They're materialists who use the spiritual process for their materialism. You know what I'm saying? You know, like somebody, you have enjoyers, right? Somebody, for their enjoyment, they go climb a mountain. For someone else, they go take a walk in a, you know, nice park. For someone else, they go out on a boat. So for someone else, they sit at home and, you know, sit on the couch and press buttons on the remote, right? So. But the point is it's enjoyment, that's the thing. You'll say, you know, one is, you know, I say, you know, is an active person like that. Another is a, you know, a sportsman or, you know, like that, adventure. Another one is, you know, they like this. But they're all just enjoyers. So because we say someone's a jnani or a yogi or a karmi, but they're all enjoyers. Just because someone uses the spiritual path for enjoyment doesn't mean that they're not an enjoyer. Does that make sense? Yeah. So because of that, they're trying to enjoy, because it's about Brahmananda, right? So that means they're attached. That's why then they're foolish. Does that make sense? Because what they're attached to is the ananda of Brahman, not Brahman itself. Does that make sense? Yeah. So they don't actually care about Brahman. They care about the ananda they'll get from Brahman. So they're still trying to be the enjoyers. So therefore they never actually will be on that Brahman platform. You know, temporarily, yes, but all living entities, you know, are in the Vasudeva Sattva platform when Mahavishnu breathes out. They're all on that platform, every last one of them. Even the one that's going to become a worm as soon as Brahma makes the creation, he's still in the Vasudeva Sattva. And then as soon as Brahma creates worms, then there he is, out in your garden. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So that's why the Acharyas, they don't consider these things very important. Right? We say, oh, but why do they make it so insignificant? Because it is. Right. So it's Krishna that's important. Okay. And his happiness. Then everything else follows. Okay. Okay. Okay, Sri Govinda Bhashya, Purva Paksha. Because the space is small, it must refer to the jiva. Siddhanta, the objection has been answered, Taduktam, in 127. Nichai yat tvad evam vyomachcha. The Lord is said to be the size of a pradesha, only because that size is convenient for meditation in the heart, which is of that size. The Lord possessing inconceivable powers is described as that size for the convenience of meditation. Right? Because he's unlimited, but he comes in that size by his yoga maya so that we can meditate. But otherwise, he's unlimited. Bhagavatam verse reference. The super soul is the only object of yoga meditation. Though he is said to be so small that he dwells in the heart, yet the super soul is yet the dwelling place of all beings, nada and ayana. Right? He's all people, then rest in him. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.5.16. All different types of meditation or mysticism are means for realizing Narayana. All austerities are aimed at achieving Narayana. Culture of transcendental knowledge is for getting a glimpse of Narayana. And ultimately salvation is entering the kingdom of Narayana. So that's the whole point, is that everything's about knowing the Lord. Right, so if you're going to meditate, austerities, culture of knowledge, and liberation, it's all for attaining the Lord. So that's the whole point. So if these, which are considered the top, are all for attaining the Lord, so anything below this is also for that, because those are the elements that you use. Does that make sense? Sutra 1.3.22. Anukrites tasya cha, anukritehe, because of imitation, tasya of him, cha, also. The jiva cannot be Brahman because the jiva develops similarity to Brahman. Sutra Prakashika. In this sutra appears an additional argument for understanding dahara to mean paramatma. It declares that the jiva imitates and dahara is the Brahman to be imitated. Shigovinda Bhashya. There's another reason also, anukrites tasya cha. The jiva cannot be Brahman because the jiva develops similarity to Brahman. The space in the heart is eternally endowed with the eight qualities. Prajapati explained that the eight qualities appear in the jiva by sadhana. Thus, the jiva's qualities follow after those of the space in the heart. The space in the heart has them eternally and unlimited. The jiva then gains them through sadhana to his limited degree of whatever is practical for him. Right? Previously, the jiva's sarup was covered by falsity, anmrita. The covering is later removed by worship of Brahman. then the jiva manifests the eight qualities, right? So that's the sarup, meaning as jivas, then they have all these nice qualities. That's the nature of the jiva. But then the point is for that to expand due to his relationship with the Lord into a form in which he can serve the Lord, then that's the next natural position. Right? And so for devotees, it happens simultaneously. You don't have to worry about the one and then the next. Right? So when the jiva manifests the eight qualities, Prajapati says that the jiva becomes like the space in the heart. The jiva is a replica or a likeness of the space in the heart, right? Anukritehe, right, means this because of imitation. It's a likeness. The original object and the object which imitates are different, as in the statement. Hanuman imitates the wind, right? So he flies like the wind, but it doesn't mean he becomes wind. Similarly, in the statement that the liberated jiva becomes like Brahman indicates that the jiva is different from Brahman. Otherwise, why would you say like? We would just say the jiva becomes Brahman. Moreover, a similar statement is found in another sruti. Niranjana paramam samyam upaiti. The pure jiva attains similarity to the Lord. Mundaka Upanishad 3.1.3. Okay, so just for on the previous point. Now, notice that there's no, what do you call it? Purva Paksha here.
Yes.
So what does that mean?
They don't have any point to argue on.
Yeah, it means that these are points that the acharyas are bringing out that are beyond even what the Mayavadis can think of. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's the point, is that there are the main points that the Mayavad philosophy is based on, or impersonal is based on. Then there's all the points that the Vaishnavas know, or the various angles they could discuss. So what they discuss is what will be within their philosophy and beyond. You know, so it's like the Lord, when he expands, then he expands to fill up the full universe, and he expands beyond that by one pradesh. Right? By 10 fingers, he goes beyond that. Right? So just there. So we do that, and then we go a little beyond. So then it's like, you know, then they have no argument. You understand? So it's not a matter of speculation. It's a matter of they see all the angles of what is Krishna conscious and what's not. So what are the ways in which one could be not Krishna conscious, and how to bring any of those to Krishna consciousness. So they even go beyond what even the great impersonal scholars, even they can't even think of. Right? Yeah. Bhagavatam verse reference. When the individual soul is liberated, we just ran out of time. Okay, so we'll stop here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanandi.